Good morning, everybody. Welcome to day two of the Microsoft Research Latin America Faculty Summit. Very excited to welcome you to this day. It's sort of the crescendo of our event, jam-packed. I know it's early, but if we don't get started now, we're going to be later all day, and then we'll miss the party tonight, which is the most important part of the entire event. So no way are we missing that one. I'm really excited to be here and to introduce our next speaker. Judith Bishop, I've known for a long time, and is an amazing colleague. So let me get my notes so I can make sure and read her awesome bio. She is the Director of Computer Science in Microsoft Research in the United States in Redmond. Her role is to create strong links between Microsoft's research groups and universities on a global scale. She encourages projects, conferences, and engages directly in research programs as well. I've worked with her on a project called TriF Sharp. We're doing some exciting things there, actually. Touch Develop, Code Hunt, the BBC Microbit, which I believe is also being discussed at this event. And latest is the quantum simulator called Liquid. She now drives the open source initiative, and her expertise is primarily in programming languages and distributed systems, with a very strong practical bias, which is pretty neat. After her degrees, her undergraduate degrees in South Africa, she received her PhD from Southampton in the UK, and then was a professor at the University of Pretoria in South Africa. She's an ACM Distinguished Educator, has received the IFIP Silver Core Award, among others, and she is also a fellow of the British Computer Society and the Royal Society of South Africa. Please give a warm welcome to Judith Bishop.
Good morning, everyone. I'm delighted to be here at this LATAM Summit, and I want to thank very much Evelyn Viecas, Jaime Puente, and of course Roy Zimmerman for inviting me and setting everything up so well. So, when would you not want something for free that's going to make you friends and actually is going to make what you do better? That's actually what people think open source is all about. I'm going to tell you much more deeply what it is and how it affects us in industry. In particular, actually, in Microsoft, because that's what I know best. But I will bring in more general terms from industry as I've seen it operating among my colleagues in other companies as well. I'm going to spend half the talk on that part, and then most of the talk, the other half, on Microsoft Research's offerings in the open source arena. So let's get going. Open source myths. Open source is often equated with being software which is in the public domain and so anyone can use it, or just freeware. In other words, it's stuff that's free and therefore it's open source. Or it's not enforced by anyone. And some of those words are good for industry and some of them are not good for industry. Same for academics, of course. But generally speaking, these are nice things to have. What is it? From the point of view of Microsoft or from industry, they jump straight into the legal aspects and they say, actually, it's also a licensing model. And there are a lot of aspects to the licensing. I have to admit straight off, I don't understand these completely. First of all, I don't have to, because when you are in a great big company, you have a large arm of people who are responsible for handling the licensing. And the licensing can get very complex. The main word to read here is on the second line. You get a license that gives you the right to copy, modify, and redistribute the code. And that is the most important thing. All right, then can you make money out of it and so on? Well, it depends on the license and it depends on variations. But the point is that you can copy the code. You can modify it and you can redistribute what you've done as a new piece of code. It also comes with no representations or warranties, and that's interesting. So unlike software which is sold by a company like Microsoft or by Apple, for example, or Oracle, who actually sell software, when it's software like this, you can actually distribute it and say, use it. I'm not going to support it. And that is a little scary when you think about it. Of course, you can support it, and there are fantastic models of this which are backed with open source software. As we know, IBM have been very successful at doing this with their Red Hat and so on. Redistribution also triggers certain other licensing obligations. And that's where it starts going down a chain, and the whole licensing thing is a mixture. I'll give you one good example of that as we go on. What is much more interesting from our point of view here is that open source is also a development methodology. It changes completely the way that software in a company is developed. So here are just six ways in which software has to change if we are going to use open source software inside a company and send it out as well. We need to regard our users as developers, or put it the other way, the people who are contributing to the open source software are also our users. We have to take into account their desires and their wishes very early on in the process. And that makes a big difference to features, to requirement specifications, and so on. Early release, you don't have releases way out there, three quarters of a year away, you keep releasing, frequent integration, and so on. Open source also enforces very high modularity of code, because you need to put things into smaller groups which can be open sourced separately, or which you replace with open source software separately. So that's actually a good thing. As you know, in code design, high modularity is regarded as a good thing. And then dynamic decision making. That can be a bit tricky in a company where you have large software groups. Some software groups in companies are hundreds of people. And if you are taking decisions based on what somebody out there said or submitted to your software repo, it could be difficult. It could disrupt, it could be disruptive. So all of these change the way you think and the way that you develop your code. So this is what's been going on inside companies for a while, and certainly with inside Microsoft. You can regard it as having three actors. They're the creators of the software, they're the users of the software, and then they're the contributors, once you've created and you've used it. And everything is in this great big open source repository. So that's the word that people talk about a lot, the repository. And at different times, industrial companies will engage in all three of those. So sometimes companies will be using other people's software. They will find some neat little algorithm or some neat little piece of code, and they will insert it into a new piece of software. And they will use the open source and contribute to open source. All of those happen. Now, you might ask about that last one. Why would a company encourage or allow even their employees to contribute in company time to open source? What's in it for them? Well, it turns out that this is part of the whole ecosystem of open source development. That if you contribute, you become part of the community, and then eventually, in time, you get back from the community what you put in. Moreover, developers are very keen to do this. And that probably, that last one, is one of the hardest ones to step over. Using, yes, we'll use what you've got and we'll use it for free. That's easy. We'll create stuff and you can have it if we don't feel that it's worth too much in IP. But the third one is company time of employees. And that has to be done as well if you want to be really part of the whole open source ecosystem. So all of those, and we'll see how they are done. So if we're doing all of that, what's in it for the software industry? And I'm going to tell you straight away that I did not write this slide. This was written for me by our people in the Microsoft open source, a part of the company. So we have a special part of the company that assists and promotes the open source aspect of what we do. So you can understand the words here are a little bit promotional. First of all, it gives us speed. If we're using other people's software, we can go faster to market. By getting comments earlier on the software, we can find out that our software is more robust. What that really means is other people are getting the bugs out for us. And that's a good thing. As you know, in open source, people submit bug reports to the repos. And that's a good thing. If you get a trusted community out there who like your software, who want to submit bug reports, that's great. Interoperability. Interoperability is something which a company like Microsoft is very, very keen on. We want to make sure that our software will run on all platforms. And there are many ways of doing this. And obviously, open source is one of them. And it certainly gives us business growth because we are not just running on the Windows platform, we can then run on other platforms as well. I'll give you some examples of those in a moment. But through the open source community, we can get that expertise going. And then the thriving technology ecosystem out there. I have to say, and you probably know this already, that young people in particular are very attracted to open source software. They feel that it's a place where, even if they don't contribute, they are allowed to contribute. So there's a freedom there. And it is a domain where one wants to be. And a forward-looking company like Microsoft certainly wants to play in this game. And it just gives you more choice, more competition, and that's where we would like to be. So, our leader and CEO, Satya Nadella, made a statement last April, so this was April 2015, that industry embraces open source. In fact, he said, Microsoft embraces open source. And I went to check on this, and I found that, of course, it is true. Every company is doing open source. And I checked up on various reports by independent observers of the ecosystem out there, rather than looking on the websites of the companies, which do tend to show all their different offerings. As you can see here, you can see that we have the big companies like Apple and IBM, Facebook and so on. They all have their open source software. But it's not just those. It's the next level down that are also using open source to promote what they do and to develop what they do. And so that's interesting. And there's some very big names there, like GE, EMC. I think there's an EMC lab here, and maybe there are even some EMC people in the audience here. VMware, Verizon is a telephone company and internet company in the US. So it's pervasive. People are relying on it, and it's not going to go away. Right. When actually did open source start inside Microsoft? It's very interesting to find out when. Now, you won't be able to see too much detail on this slide. That doesn't matter. What's interesting is that it happened more than 10 years ago, and we had this trajectory of involvement in open source. Very slowly, parts of the company were starting to move into open source. And you can see the little Linux penguin there in the middle. And at that stage, we decided we were going to have some kind of Linux. And there were other ones like Node.js, .NET, that's the purple one up on the top there, until larger and larger parts of the software that was on offer or that we wanted to incorporate or that we bought were involved in open source. And these were made announced as they went in bits and pieces, until eventually we came to that conclusion, which, as I told you, Satya gave last year. How does the open source actually work inside Microsoft itself? Well, there are different ways. One of the ones is that we can incorporate open source inside existing large tools. Now, you might know about Visual Studio. Visual Studio is our environmental software editor that is used for the development of software. And inside of that is an open source section, which is called Python Tools. And Python Tools is for development of Python, and it was brought over from the Python community as an open source piece of software. The Python tools are open source. When Visual Studio is shipped as an actual piece of code, it is shipped with this open source. And as a result, if you look inside, and you can actually, you will find that there are about 150 different licenses which are shipped with it. So this is the licensing aspect which I told you about, because different pieces of those Python tools and other pieces which are inside Visual Studio, which are open source, have to have their attributive licenses shipped with them. Most users never see that, but it's very, very important that they're there. The other part of Visual Studio, which is interesting, I think, for all academics in the audience, and I think most of you are, is that there is a code version. It's called the Code Edition, of Visual Studio. It's a bit tricky, that word code. It doesn't mean code, it means the code edition is the academic edition, actually, which is free. And that one is free to students, and that one is also available on Mac, on Linux, and free to all students. And in that, you will also find this open source software. So, all in all, you can have hybrid systems. Another example of this, which I'll be telling you about later, is where the company can actually make a lot of money out of a particular piece of code and yet have open source in it, but not all of it. And that is what makes you realize that open source is not giving away all the IP. It's just giving away the software, but using and developing in the open source model. Now, openness is a word which Microsoft has used a lot, and openness is the making access of standard technology, what they say, really happen. So it's not always possible to have different versions for all the different platforms I've just mentioned available. But one way of doing it is to take things to a meta level and to leverage something like the Azure cloud. And then what you can do is you can put the software, like the Windows software or Ubuntu software or any of that, inside the cloud and then put it up. So this isn't really open source development, but it is making sure that we have open software. It's a slightly different version. It's made much more easy by the availability of open source software on repos, public repos, which are out there. So one example I'd like to mention is the Windows SDK, which for Facebook, and we probably a lot of you use Facebook. I know that I have to use it to make sure that I can keep in touch with my family. And there's a Windows SDK for Facebook, and that is available open source. So Facebook itself is not a product from Microsoft, but this little SDK is. And you can incorporate that into whatever it is that you want to do. And that was made available. And you can see that these, you won't be able to read it, but it was developed by the, a Windows developer platform team early in July last year. And the open source team at Microsoft released it as an implementation of the Facebook SDK. So they made that so that things could be easier and people could use on different platforms what needed to be done. Right now, actually, this week, in Texas, there's the biggest open source conference called OSCON, and Microsoft had a plane load of people going to that conference. It also had one of the keynotes there by Joseph Sirosh, who is the corporate vice president of one of our units. And the whole idea was around Microsoft using and developing in the open source arena. So these would be the people who make these kind of things happen. And they certainly were there to hire people and to expose what is being done in the open source. So I'd like to switch now to what's going on in Microsoft Research, which of course is where we come from, those of us who are here talking to you over these couple of days. Off often we have pictures of buildings, but I decided I'll have a picture of the trees outside Microsoft, which are very beautiful in all seasons. So Microsoft Research was established in 1991, and those of you who are good at arithmetic will know that that means that we're 25 years old this year, and we are happy to be having an anniversary. Over 1,000 scientists. We have 9 different units. Of course, one of them is here in Brazil. And we have 24 research areas. They keep changing, but if you look on the website today, it says they're 24. Now, inside this enormous organization, there is a lot going on in open source. The problem was, as you can see, that it was very difficult for people to find out what was going on. You could go to any project page of an area that you were interested in, and you could look up a project. It was not really evident whether it was open source or not open source, and so on. So that's why we started within Microsoft this initiative to really expose and make clear what is Microsoft Research's contribution to the open source environment. Since 2014, there's been a huge trend towards researchers open sourcing their software. We now have over 50 projects. Now that sounds perhaps like a small number, but it's quite a large number, because one of the things about an open source project is that you can't just put it out there and leave it. It's got to be looked after. Projects need to be curated. Projects that are open source will start to get contributions, and you need to look at those contributions. You will eventually, if your project is popular, start building a community. And there are various ways of controlling that community. If you're a single person, you might have to say, whoa, I can't take that many contributions. But on the other hand, if it is a very popular project, maybe you can get more people to help you with it. The projects are not just for academics. They're definitely aimed at other developers. They're aimed at our internal Microsoft products as well. So there's a huge variety. And the way I want to go through this is to show you a sample of some of our products that we've got out there, our projects. And in the research showcase, you can come and look at more of them. So, as I said, the way we dealt with this is we set up this portal. And the other thing, and now you're going to hear me mention this word for the first time, is we decided that it was good to try to move to a single repository, which turns out to be GitHub. Many of you will equate open source with GitHub, but GitHub is not the only place where open source can be. There were and are other places where you can put open source. It just turns out that GitHub has become probably at the moment the most popular, and Microsoft has a special relationship with GitHub now. We have people who work on both sides. They come and work at Microsoft and help us, and we help them. GitHub have an academic arm as well, and we are very good friends with them. They help us with promotion of our products. So, what exactly have we got? Well, we've got tools in specialized domains. So here are the 12 domains we've got: verification, cryptography, visualization, programming, cloud computing, education, of course, artificial intelligence, hardware, systems, science, documents, interesting one that, but we'll see why, and society. And then from those, we can pick out and classify all of the open source software we have, and then you can go and look at it. And this is what it looks like. So you get a list of the projects, and you can then from there go and have a look at what a project is and whether it would be of use to you. So instead of going to all 50, if you're in artificial intelligence, you can see, well, at the moment they're 10, but next week there might be 12. And we also list them not in alphabetical order, which might sound a bit strange, but we list them in a strange order so that your eyes are encouraged to go and look at the ones that are new. And one of the ones that is new-ish is CNTK, our computational network toolkit, and there's a talk about that at the summit. So I'm going to spend the next few slides just looking at and highlighting some of these projects. So the computational network toolkit is for mission-critical AI research, and the idea here is that how do you measure how well a project is doing in the open source domain? How do I measure it as a project leader of my initiative? Well, one of the ways I can do it is to go and look on GitHub. And GitHub gives you a lot of statistics. Sometimes it's a bit irritating, because those of you who are great GitHub people will know that the statistics only go back 2 weeks. And if you forget to go and look at something every 2 weeks, you then miss out on some statistics. But anyway, this one you'll see is that it has had mergers, proposed, and closed issues very, very recently. And I only took this pull yesterday. So we'll see that it had an interesting merge, which was called a bug fix on grayscale images are now assumed by default if the number of channels, blah, blah, blah. So everybody can see what's going on with the project. Brilliant, all right? And in particular, the person who submitted that can see that, and that is now been fixed and merged into the mainstream. There's a proposed one here which says sublinear memory optimization on ResNet. Interesting proposal. And maybe that will be merged later on. So all of this is public. And it's public for the team and public for people. Code Contracts is a much older project. Code Contracts is a language-agnostic way to express coding assumptions in .NET. So this is a way of making your programs more secure. And it's an active developer community for a long time, managed by Mike Barnett in Microsoft. And it's been moved over to the mainstream of Visual Studio. So Code Contracts is now in Visual Studio. If you get Visual Studio, you get Code Contracts. So it's one of those pieces of open source inside. Here's another piece of the way that you can find out how well is the project doing in open source. You can look at the contributions. Now you can see that it, around about this time that we're looking at, it had close on 40. I have a manager, and one of his little sayings is that a big number? Is 40 a big number? And initially I was thrown by such a question. So you have to go back and think about it. Is that a big number? Well, it is a big number, because if it was 4,000, you wouldn't be able to deal with them. 40 is a big number of contributions at any one day. And that's fantastic, to have that kind of people contributing. In fact, there are studies that have shown that if you have an active project like this, you can actually forego having up to two developers that you would otherwise have to pay for in the company just by leveraging and using the open source community. And of course, you're giving back to the open source community in other ways. And down below, you can see that the source code has had 437 commits and so many branches and so on and so on. Daphne. Some of you might have heard of Daphne. Daphne is a programming language with a verifier. This is also a very mature project. It was open source right from the beginning, and it was on a different repo, not GitHub. It was on CodePlex, run by Ruston Lino, and he spent a lot of time making sure that Daphne would run on different platforms, in fact, five platforms. So if you go to daphne.com, you'll be able to download it for whatever computer you're running. He's now since moved it over to GitHub, and you can once again see that these are graphs from CodePlex, and he's got about 40 contributors going at any one time. He has some main contributors. There's a postgrad student at Imperial College that we almost want to give a medal to, because this student has contributed so much to the project. Another thing that's interesting about open source software, or about any kind of software, is that you can make it run in a browser. And this was pioneered by projects like Daphne. And Microsoft is very proud that we can do this. So instead of having to download software, put it on your computer, ensure that it runs, and so on, which can be daunting for people, you can try it out by just opening your browser and then checking that it runs and seeing whether you like the experience. So a lot of software which comes out of this particular group in Microsoft runs this way. It's called Rise for Fun. And there it is, R-I-S-E, Rise for Fun. And that particular screenshot comes from Daphne in Rise for Fun. Touch Develop is another one, and there's going to be part of Touch Develop will also be in the research showcase and in the BBC Microbit. It was created for apps on phones, tablets, laptops, and so on. It's a language specifically designed for using your finger on all of these devices many years ago. And it was led by Tom Ball, and it's now moved over to these little chips, which you're going to be able to see and use. And the history of that one was interesting. It wasn't open source. And there was no intention to open source it. But we wanted to have it in a system in the USA called Hour of Code. You might have heard it. It was a fantastically organized and publicized event with the ACM. Even President Obama was promoting it for children to learn to code. But they would only put projects on the website if they were open source. So we said, all right, we'll open source it. However, the project itself doesn't at the moment actively accept contributions. You can look at the code and you can branch from it, but it's not accepting contributions. Perhaps you can discuss that with Jonathan, and I might be wrong at the moment, but that was how it was a while back. And it runs on any device. It also runs on your browser, and that's a great thing. And one of the other things here is it has its own open repository. So it runs in the cloud, and it has its own little cloud place where all its own language scripts run. And you can see how many there are, which is enormous. So it has, at the moment 157 forks when I took this, probably more now. So people have forked it off. Now, this is a very big project. It's called Project Orleans. It's headed up by one of our distinguished scientists called Phil Bernstein. And it's a distributed interactive application model for virtual actors. Now that sounds very formal. In fact, this is the brains behind the computer game called Halo. Now, some of you, or maybe your children or someone, have run Halo. And it's automatically deployed in the cloud. And Halo, of course, is a major revenue base for Microsoft. But inside it, the streaming part, it's open source. So you can go and look at how it works. And you can use the same streaming base if you want to for your thing. And you can see that when I took this clip here, there were 11 authors, and they were not all in Microsoft, because I know that the team is two people at the moment. There were three, one's left, there are two left. So we have 11 people from all over the world contributing. F-sharp was referred to in the introduction. The difference in F-sharp is that it is a project that was open sourced right from the beginning. Don Syme, who's in our Cambridge lab, said, I'm going to have this language, it's going to be open source. And then it became so well used and so mature that they created what's called a foundation. And they moved it out of Microsoft into the foundation. Microsoft still supplies F-sharp as part of its languages, but the foundation looks after it, and it has community projects, it runs workshops, it does all of these things which foundations do. So there's such a huge community around this that it runs itself. Mozilla is another one in another part of the world that has its own foundation as well. Eclipse has a foundation. So very mature open source projects move that way. And finally, Madoko. I said I was going to come to documents. Madoko is something I really think you should take a look at. It is a markdown processor which runs in the cloud, and it enables you to do LaTeX type document processing, but in the cloud and with other people all working on the same document. It's beautifully tooled. You can use different repos. You can use Dropbox, you can use GitHub, you can use Azure to store your projects, your documents, and it's multi-platform. Run on anything. It's sorted out. It's written in a specific type of computer language called COCOA, with Don Lane as the leader there, and it's also open source. And it's nice thing about it is it's open to extension, high modularity. So if you want to add chemistry or physics modules to this, there are already quite a few modules, but if you wanted to add more, it would be really easy to do. It has over 2,000 new users in a week and very high usage already. It's getting a big user base here. So with all of that, we decided that one of the things we were going to do is find out whether students would like this kind of project, open source. Did students like it? And so we ran a challenge this year to see if students out there would be able to use these projects. And just to do a bit of advertising, these were some of the students who won the challenge, which was announced 2 weeks ago. So they had a lot of money in prizes. They got 15,000 between them, and the winners used the following projects. So there was DSSM, Microsoft Cognitive Services, which I think there's also going to be a talk about here. It used to be called Project Oxford. Z3, which is a verifier language, and CNTK. So these were the popular projects with these students, and they came from all over the world and did fantastic work on the open source projects. Finally, this is my summary. If you want to have open source, you can do it in different ways. And you can have external input that forces you to go open source. You can have single repos or more repos. You can have a push to a foundation and so on. Versions for all platforms I've mentioned. You can ship with major platforms and inside major platforms. Timing is not important. You can go open source at different times. But the main thing is you need communities of developers. And that is where you all come in. So I hope that in the projects in the research showcase that are open source, you'll perhaps talk more deeply to the developers who are out there and ask them about and see whether you can contribute and work with us through this mechanism, and we'd be delighted to have you. Thanks.
Very nice, Judith, thank you. We have a few minutes for questions. Does anybody have anything they want to start off with? I know it's early. Oh, good.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for your presentation. I was curious about a bubble where Moodle appears together with Microsoft. Could you please talk about initiatives from Microsoft regarding educational tools and maybe open source tools regarding that subject?
Microsoft has many open educational tools. Now, obviously there are the ones which assist everybody in education, such as OneNote and the Office platform and so on. Then there are the more serious ones which are for programming. So are you, which ones are you intending?
In your presentation, there was
education.
Yeah, with Moodle.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. So the educational tools are the ones which are therefore helping with it, with coding. So let's take, for example, TouchDevelop. That would be one of the typical ones that's listed under there. And the idea would be that this is something new, something fresh, and we're interested, extremely interested, in finding out how other people, particularly in education and in academia, would want to use that. And through the open source model, they might be able to extend it with us. So that is part of it. I think the best thing is if you come to the research showcase and I can explore more of those with you and show them to you.
Good question. Yeah.
Is there any particular license which is the most used one for Microsoft open projects?
Yes. In fact, I have the picture here. So this is the spectrum of licenses, which is a worldwide diagram of open source taken from GitHub, actually. And the big blue thing up at the top there is the MIT license. And that is the one that's recommended now within Microsoft to use. The next one down below is the GPL. We don't recommend that one in Microsoft as much. And the reason is here. The permissive ones are the ones we recommend more, which means that you can attribute, in other words, you recognize when you send out the code, you say, I got this code from this place, and when you use it, you must also say you got it from this place. But the restrictive ones are like the GPL ones, and we find those very difficult to work with. So Microsoft works much more with the MIT. Yeah.
Good. One more?
Thank you. Some of my students have been interns at Microsoft Research, and one common complaint is that they weren't allowed to use open source software in their projects. So that has policy changed? And in general, how is the use of open source in Microsoft projects?
Were they at Microsoft Research and they weren't allowed to use it?
Yeah, they weren't allowed to use open source because they were afraid of some sort of contamination of the code that they were developing.
So what is important to know is that there is a process by which, even if you go back here, once you incorporate open source within your own project, you have to make sure that that is identified forever, right? And so I think that that process is handled by our release team, by our open source team, and it is a large team of people who ensure that Microsoft or any company would do this. Microsoft's not unique. That would ensure that when anything then goes outside the company, we can't get sued by not having the correct licenses around all the pieces of software. So it's very likely that for numerous reasons, depending on the size of what your students were doing, that it might have been better to write it themselves, or because of time constraints, because I have to say that going through this process is at least a six-week process. But it's worthwhile, because once you've done it, you've got it. But it might well have been that the owner of whatever was going on felt that it, you know, the weighed it up and said, let's not use the open source here. But it would not have been a decision that would have been anti-open source. It would have been made for other reasons, I suspect. Or maybe that was a while back, and now we're in a newer mode.
That's great. Thank you, Judith. I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up there. Let's please give her another warm welcome. Or thank you.